And welcome back to another week of the Shades of Magic Read-Along. You might have noticed that we were away for a week. You might also have noticed this is a completely different setup than I had before. That is because we had a tiny tragedy and some footage was lost. And so I am actually recording this for the second time. I have become intimately acquainted with these books over the last couple weeks as I desperately attempt to re-record these videos for you. So you will bear with me if the lighting is not quite as great, if it looks slightly less polished. I no longer have a proper set or a proper team. It is literally just me in a tiny cottage in France doing my best. So without further ado, I think it's time that we get back into the Shades of Magic read-along. Where we left off, I just feel like we probably all need just the briefest of recaps. We left off with Kel Maresh in Grey London, Lila and her crew setting sail for Red London to go to the Essentosh. Kel has just found out that the old King of England is dead. Long live the new king. And Holland has reappeared. Holland is on the White London throne, seemingly alive, not only alive, but looking quite hale and quite hearty. And that should strike a lot of warning bells in our head. So without further ado, part four, London's Calling. Let's see if I remember what happens. So we open part four with Rye watching the town come together, watching the tournament be formed. He has really kind of taken point on the tournament, and we are watching the stadiums be erected. We learn that this is really Rye's pet project at this point. And this is his jam. It's about spectacle, but it's also about sending a deft political message. This is something that Rye should be quite good at. And so it's a really good test. Rye wants to prove himself, especially after the events of A Darker Shade of Magic, where in an attempt to grab strength and grab power, he is part of what put his world in danger. And he's quite proud of the way everything is coming together. He also, we learn, is struggling a little bit in the aftermath of his new bond with Kel. He specifically says, "It was such a peculiar thing to know your pain was tethered to someone else's, that every time you hurt, they felt it, and every time they hurt, it was because of you. These days, Riot always seemed to be the source of Kel's suffering, while Kel himself walked around as if the world were suddenly made of glass, all because of Rye. It wasn't even in the end, wasn't even balanced, wasn't fair. Rye held Kel's pain in his hands while Kel held Rye's life in his." So we have a lot on Rye's plate right now, but we end that chapter with him receiving an invitation to go meet with Tirin, who is our Avanesson, our head priest, in the royal baths, and we sense that mischief is afoot. In the next chapter, Rye meets with Tirin, and they converse about a scheme, including involving Kel, really centered around Kel. We learn that Tirin strongly disapproves of this, whatever it is. And Rye also has a chance to see the roster for the Essentosh, for the tournament. And on looking at the roster, two names stand out to him. One is Kamarov Lost. We wonder why. It has a K and an L in it. What could it be? The other name is Alucard Emrys, Alucard being the captain of Lila's ship. And we begin to suspect that there is some history between Rye and Alucard, and that Rye has feelings about it. So in chapter three, we see Kel returning to Red London from Grey London, where he is escorted by two guards, Staff and Hastro, who we learn have essentially been assigned to him, not so much like bodyguards as like wards, as stewards, because he is not currently being trusted by the king after the events of A Darker Shade of Magic, after he smuggled the Blackstone, which then almost destroyed the world. Little things. Anyway. We go with him to Kel's room, only to discover that Rye is waiting for him there. Rye apologizes for being difficult in the last couple months, describes Kel as being equally difficult, and says he would like to make amends. And Rye reveals his plan. He has entered Kel Maresh into the Essentosh, into the tournament, under the guise of Kamarov Lost. And essentially, Rye is saying, dude, you got to compete. You got to blow off some steam because, like, you're driving me crazy and I'm driving you crazy and I can't handle you treating me like I'm made of glass. So please go and compete. We both need this release. He presents Kel with his disguise. It's quite fancy. Kel likes the look of it. And he's like, what do we do about my guards, Staff and Hastra, who follow me everywhere? And Rye's like, obviously, we'll just involve them in the scheme. And he invites the guards in and he's like, hey, the king totally approved this. Kel is entering the tournament because we suspect that there's nefarious schemes afoot in the tournament. He's going to suss it out So your job is to help him do that. The king is totally on board. Lies, lies, lies across the board. But you know what? It works. Meanwhile, we cut to Lila Bard, who is thinking about her return to London, which of course makes her think about Kel. She is working on magic, this thing that she is currently developing. We are like, oh shit, Lila Bard has magic now. She is working on it with Alucard's help. But as she is standing on the docks of Sassenroche with her team about to depart, she pulls on the ocean itself, and it does not go well. And this is a quick lesson in the limitations of magic. Alucard scolds her and basically says, you have to understand, if you can't hold it in your hand and in your mind, you can't control it. There are limits. We learn that each of them, Alucard and Lila, have their own reservations about their trip back to London, and we learn that each of them left for a different reason, though neither one of them is admitting to why. With that, we return to White London in Chapter 5, and Holland, again, Holland, what the hell? Last time we left off with Holland, it was literally just like, call me Holland. We didn't get any of the backstory of how Holland got there. So now we're getting the backstory. Holland is on the throne. He's musing about the changes that are being wrought in his world, the fact that his world is now reviving itself, seemingly. And with that, we figure out, how is this happening? We go to a flashback of Holland waking up in Black London, our very first time seeing Black London. And we essentially find out that he has been saved there by a figure named Oseron. Oseron is the god of Black London. He was essentially a king made of magic that developed too much will and essentially consumed the world. He is a world-ending god. And he's like, hey, Holland, I have a deal to strike with you. Your world wants to be reborn. My world is dead, and I could really use a vessel, a body, if you let me in, and if you let me basically like use you as a shape, as a form, I will help you restore your world to glory. And Holland, because all Holland has ever wanted is to restore White London to a shade of its former self, accepts. And with that, we go to part 5, Royals Welcome, in which basically we start gathering all of our pieces in one place for the Essentosh. So we open with Lila Bard, who is on the ship as the Night Spire heads back to London. She is practicing her magic, and she is grilling everyone aboard the ship about the Essentosh. She wants to know how it works, who gets to compete, what the rules are, basically how she's gonna con her way into this magical tournament. The sheer ego of trying to con your way into a magical tournament when you have been able to do magic for 4 months. But you know what? Lila likes to dream big. She's got that BDE, except it's like BME. It's like big magic energy all the time. So we learn about the Veskins and the Ferrowins. We learn that this is a tri-empire tournament. Essentially, Arnes, the place where most of our story is set, is one empire. Vesk is another. Ferrow is another. This tournament is a chance for all three to compete against each other. So she's learning. She didn't even know there were other empires. Like, she's learning more every single day. We also learn that Alucard Emery has no idea if he can win this tournament. And she's like, then what's the point of competing? And he says, well, for the pleasure. Like, there's a difference between victory and pleasure. And Lila does not understand the difference. And in trying to help her understand the difference, he tries to seduce her. And he kisses her. And it turns out he's just fucking with her. He's trying to get her to let her guard down so that she will tell him some of her secrets. She figures this out and she is royally pissed off, as is her wont. Meanwhile, we cut back to Red London and Rhyme Resch, who is having a nightmare in which Kel was the one stabbed in A Darker Shade of Magic instead of him. And he wakes and he goes to the window and he watches the ships coming into Red London carrying the tournament participants and the guests. And he is specifically searching for Alucard Emery's ship, the Night Spire. Back on the ship, Lila is pissed off. She's storming around and she's so mad that the ship is seeming to rock with the force of her anger. And she has a really nice conversation with Lennos, who is kind of the second mate on the ship, where he says that he thinks that she is blessed, Aven. And Aven is a word for blessed, but it's also a word for cursed or other or apart. And he essentially tells her that, like, you don't have to be blessed in the way that Kel Maresh is blessed, but there's definitely something about you. He's quite a spiritual figure. It's going to factor in the rest of the series. He's a very nice guy, which is probably a good sign that he's going to die at some point in the series. And after their conversation, the shout goes up that land, that they can see land now. They are getting closer. Meanwhile, the next day, Kel is watching the ships arrive, just as Rai did the night before, and he is wondering which one Lila Bard would be on. He doesn't expect her to be coming back. He's just kind of daydreaming about her. Rai says that they need to go downstairs and greet their guests because the royal emissaries are arriving, and we learn that they are both a little bit nervous about Princess Cora, who is a member of the Vaskin royal family, who is apparently quite ferocious, even though she's quite young. They go down and they meet Cole and Cora, who are our prince and princess from Vesk, and Lord Solinar, who is from Pharaoh, and we really get to see a bit of Rai's gift for diplomacy in action. We also get the idea that Kel is royally just fed up with royals at this point. He's pissed off at the king, who's still punishing him for what happened with Rai. He doesn't really want to be a diplomat. He's mad at the Grey London royals. Like, he just wishes that he was off sailing around the world with Lila Bard. Little does he know that Lila Bard is about to be back there. Anyway, speaking of, chapter 5 of this part has the Night Spire, Lila, and Alucard's ship returning to Red London. And Alucard, as they pull in, this is where he's like, why are you still mad at me? And she's like, you tried to seduce me for information. And he's like, you can't hold that against me forever. And she was like, it was yesterday. So I am still mad. Anyway, they talk, and they're talking about Tells and about letting guard down, and Alucard reveals that he has known about her eye the entire time, that she has a glass eye, and in exchange for kind of revealing this information about herself without her permission, he tells her his own secret, not all of it, but he tells her about these scars that are around his wrists, which are the result of manacles from a time that he was in prison. And he doesn't clearly want to talk about it. He doesn't give her more than that, but we're starting to chip away at the secrets that make Alucard tick. They dock, and we see Alucard Emery's cat, who has come up before, but I don't think I've mentioned her. Her name is Asa. She's a cat. Lila hates cats. I can't remember if that was in the last episode. It's really not hugely important in this book. There's a really cute moment with it in Conjuring that we'll get to. But anyway, Alucard's cat is offloaded from the boat. And as they're docking, Lila sees another captain. And it's the first time she's seen a female captain. And this female captain's name is Josta. And Josta has that big dick energy. Josta has whatever it is that Lila Bard wants. Lila is like, that's my kind of captain. I don't know if I want to be you or be with you, but she has eyes for Josta. It's going to come back. So they check in to the inn where the crew is going to be staying, and Lila goes straight to the night market of Red London to see Calla. Calla is the one who gave her her suit, her coat, and her mask in book one. She has come to see Calla because she wants her mask reinforced for the Essentosh games. Calla's like, that's probably a terrible idea, and I don't want to do that. And Lila's like, great, I'll go get someone else to do it. It won't be as good, but I'll get it done. And Calla's like, I'll do it. Calla also reveals that Kel has come to see her in the night market every single week to see if to try and pay the debt for Lila's clothes from book one. And Lila's like, what a dick. And like, Calla's like, no, he's coming to see if you've been back to pay those debts yourself. And it's like, oh, he's thinking about her. He's just been checking in on her. Lila's like, whatever. And she leaves. As she leaves, Kel arrives. So we have a first of a couple of near misses between Kel and Lila in Red London. Kel arrives at the night market with Hastra, one of his guards. Hastra's very excited that Kel is going to be competing as Kamarov because Hastra, blessed soul, has always really wanted to be involved in a plot. He's very excited. He wants to wear a disguise. He's just glad to be there. Anyway, and Hastra's like, have a glass of wine. And Kel's like, thanks. I really needed this. I've had a shit day. And then he goes to see Calla and he learns that Lila Bard is black in London. And it's like, oh my God. It's very exciting. It's like kind of rocks his world. It rocks his world so much, it's how we end the entire part. Delilah Bard was back in London. Okay, part 6, imposters. It's always a really good sign when a part is called that. Okay, chapter 1, we have Holland again in White London recalling these stories that he was raised on of the Someday King, a mythic figure that would resurrect White London, a figure he has never believed in, but he now seems to be becoming. He's transforming a city square back to life, and he has this magic of a god inside him. But we also get the sense that that god inside him, Oseron, does not want to stop there. The word that keeps echoing through Holland's head like a bell is the word more. more. And we're like, that's going to be a problem for you at some point. Back in Red London at the tavern, Lila Bard is looking for Alucard. She sees him sneak out. And because Lila Bard sneaks out wherever Alucard sneaks out, she sneaks after him. She follows him all the way to a noble estate. And she's like, son of a bitch, my captain is a royal. Like, who knew about this? Sidebar, everybody knew about this. His name is Alucard Emery, and anyone who was raised in Red London would have known that Emery is one of the five royal houses, along with Kaysen, Rosic, Lareni, and Maresh. I know this because they're all important in Threats. I'm not sure I would remember it otherwise. But she's like, oh shit, this dude is a noble, and I had no idea. Which, yeah, there's a lot of things Lila doesn't know about Red London. She's picking them up very quickly. She eavesdrops on the family. We learn that Alucard has an older brother named Barris and a little sister named Anissa. And Anissa, who's like 15, is the one who gave him the cat. And we also learn that he does not get along with his brother, Barris. He doesn't get along with his family. And also he knew that she was eavesdropping that entire time because Alucard Emery can see magic. So of course he could see Lila there. Meanwhile, he's like, I want to get out of here. I don't like it here. Let's go drinking or something. We cut back to Kel training for the Essentosh. Now he has a purpose. And he's like feeling really good about having a purpose. We have a beautiful moment with Hastra, his guard. This is a really good sign that Hastra is going to die. And if you couldn't predict it from the moment he had this beautiful moment with Kel, I'm sorry, you haven't read my books long enough. Hastra is this lovely young guard who, it turns out, wants to be a priest one day, and priests have the ability to balance magic, and he grows for Kel the beginnings of a lovely little plant that is designed to, like, whose leaves ameliorate pain. And we're like, we should have known. Like, you should probably just know right there Hastra doesn't survive this series. We also, in this moment, as Kel is training, learn some of the rules of the tournament, but we'll get to that. Don't worry about it. Meanwhile, Lila Bard is still looking for a way into the tournament. She's like, son of a bitch, I thought it would be a lot easier to cheat my way into this, but apparently there's a roster, there's a set number of places, everyone's already been announced. What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do? She's trying to think about it. She's wandering the city. She gets back to the tavern just as the rest of her crew is heading out. She's like, where are you guys going? They're like, oh, we're going to this party, kind of off the books party, where you're going to meet a lot of the competitors. And she's like, sounds like a way in. I'm going to have to go with you. So they go to size up the competition. And we meet Kisimir, who's the ex-victor of the Essentosh. We meet Jannar, who is definitely based on a BTS singer in my head visually. And he is one of Alucard's oldest friends. We get a mention of Kamarov, though obviously he's not there. And Lila spots a potential match, a man named Stassian Elsor, who has basically her build and her look. And she's like, bingo. And he leaves and she follows him out. And we're like, oh no, Stassian, this probably isn't going to go very well for you. Sure enough, it doesn't. Lila Bard jumps Stassian Elsor and they have a tussle and she knocks him unconscious. And Alucard shows up and is like, Jesus Christ, I just don't know what to do with you. Like, this reflects on me. I am another competitor. It's going to look like a member of my crew tried to axe the competition. Essentially, I now have to help you. I don't have any choice, and I'm very pissed at you, and you can't be on my ship anymore when this is all over, but let's just get through right now. He bribes some men to load Stassian Elsor's body. He's alive. He's just unconscious. Onto a boat, and then Lila goes to Stassian's room and dons her disguise as Stassian Elsor. And she has figured out her way into the tournament. And with that, I feel like I haven't taken a single breath. And with that, we head to part 7, Intersections. This is the last part of this week's read-along, so buckle up. Lila goes around Red London for the next day. She makes sure that everyone sees her as Stassian Elsor. She leaves places so that people have to run after her. Stassian Elsor, Master Elsor. So that everyone is starting to associate her with Stassian Elsor. And we learn about the Banner Night happening. The Banner Night is the official beginning of the Essentosh. It's where all of the competitors come to the palace and are feted and introduced to each other. And obviously, she's going to have to be there too. We see Kel getting ready for the Banner Night with Rai, but Kel is not getting ready as Kamarov because Kel has to be there as Kel. Kel has to be seen as the Antari magician next to the prince. So obviously he assumes that Kamarov is not going to be present there. It's not his problem though. This is Rai's problem because it's Rai's idea. We see Rai getting ready for the banner night, sorting out his gems and his jewels and his clothes, and Alucard Emery walks into his bedroom and is very sassy and is very sexy. And Rye is clearly trying to be stone cold about it, but obviously has feelings for Alucard. And we get the sense that Rye Maresh and Alucard Emery are exes. That they are exes and that shit is still very much stirred up between them. Rye makes a comment about Alucard essentially abandoning him, running away. Alucard essentially only says that he's back and that he's missed him. Dun, dun, dun. We get these two very, very well-known lines in this, which is, "You are far too familiar with your prince," he warned, "so you confess it then," his lips brushed against Rye's throat, "that you are mine." And then with the last line of the scene, "Fix your crown, my prince, it's crooked." These two lines that are known for being just a little hot under the collar. So Kel, meanwhile, heading down to the banner night when he runs into a servant that's like, "I can't find the prince. He hasn't come down." And Kel's like, "I'll go get him." Kel heads towards Rye's room as Alucard Emery is exiting it. And Kel is like, "You motherfucker, I'm pretty sure I exiled you." And we're like, dun, dun, dun. Kel and Alucard hate each other. Hate each other. The hatred is palpable. I have line for myself here that just says absolute banger lines. Like, they are spitting venom back and forth at each other. It's that down dog, like, go heal at your master's side kind of shit. Like, it is bad. It is brutal. Alucard strolls off to the banner night because obviously he's a competitor. Rye appears and Kel's like, "What the fuck? You had him in your room?" And Rye's like, "He let himself in. We got a party to go to. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We got a party." They got to go down to the party. Meanwhile, Lila arrives at the banner night as Stassian Elsor. She sees and talks with Alucard Emery. She sees Kel. And we get her, like, kind of first take on seeing Kel since being back in London. And it's kind of hot, so I'll read it to you. I don't know why I find weird shit hot, but here we go. Kel had told her once that he felt more like possession than a prince, but standing at Rye's side, one hand around his glass and the other on the rail as he gazed down on the crowd, he looked like he belonged. The prince said something and Kel's face lit up in a silent laugh. Where was the bloodied boy who collapsed on her bedroom floor? Where was the tortured magician, veins turning black as he fought a talisman's pull? Where was the sad, lonely royal who'd stood on the docks and watched her walk away? That last one she could almost see. There at the edge of his mouth and the corner of his eye. And Lila, like, feels herself wanting to go toward him and is like, "Shall not." And instead, she has an interaction with Kamarov Lost. And we're like, what? Because Kel is up on that balcony. Well, it turns out that this was Rye's plot, that he made sure that he hired somebody to be there that night as Kamarov. He told the actor that, like, the real Kamarov didn't like public appearances outside of fighting or whatever. I don't know. He spun a lie. He's very good at lying. And so somebody else has, like, played the role for the night so that Kel could play Kel. So Rye and Kel are talking. They're having their little banter. And Kel notices Stassian Elsor, and he thinks he's hallucinating because Stassian Elsor, in his mind, looks and moves and talks a whole lot like Lila Bard. But he's been seeing Lila everywhere throughout this book. In his mind, he keeps kind of hallucinating her. And so he just assumes that Stassian, it's just another one of those moments where Kel is missing Lila. And so he's seeing her face everywhere. Meanwhile, Lila is discovered by Tirin. And Tirin is like, "Lila Bard, you're not in this tournament." And she's like, "Of course I am. How would you know?" And he's like, "Because I organized the tournament. I organized the roster. I said it. How did this happen?" And she's like, "It's fine." "It's gonna be fine. Just stay out of my way, old man." And he's like, "Honestly, I'm not getting involved. I have my hands full with Kel and Rye. I can't handle any more subterfuge in this palace right now." And she essentially asks how Kel and Rye are doing, and he admits that they're not doing great. They're not doing very well. We have another near miss with Kel as she leaves Tirin, and Kel approaches Tirin, and Tirin and Kel talk about the tournament and also about the royal family, which is both punishing and confining Kel ever since what happened with Rye, and the fact that he is essentially now the holder of Rye's life force. So it's a stressful day for all. And then we have Kel and Rye getting drunk and stealing into the arena, like into one of the floating arenas that Rye has designed. and just having like a really nice brotherly bonding moment before shit hits the fan at the last third of the book. And afterward, Rai confesses to us, to the reader, that he thinks he needs this to happen even more than Kel does. That essentially ever since he was revived, he hates himself. He hates being alive. It doesn't feel right. He doesn't feel at home in his skin anymore or in his head. He feels, here's the quote. Because Rai didn't need his protection, not anymore, and he'd only told a partial truth when he said they both needed this. The whole truth was Rai needed it more. Because Kel had given him a gift he did not want and could never repay. He'd always envied his brother's strength, and now in a horrible way, it was his. He was immortal and he hated it. And so Rai needs this outlet. We end the part and this week by going back to White London, and we have Oseron, that god that is now taken up residence inside Holland, pushing Holland to do more and more and more. And when Holland tries to resist him, Oseron is beginning to take over his body and forcing his hand. And Holland, in desperation, tries to strike a new bargain with Oseron. Essentially, only an Antari magician is strong enough to hold Oseron, to be a vessel for Oseron without decaying at first touch. The magic is too strong. And Holland says, what if I could get you a different body and a different world? Would you leave mine in peace after you fixed it? And essentially, Oseron says, sure, bring me another vessel and I will leave. But if you fail, I will do whatever I want. I essentially will take your body and your will, and I will rule this world as my own. And we understand that Holland's intention is to somehow provide Oseron with Kel. And that is where we end the second third. I hope that you enjoyed it. I hope you come back next week to finish A Gathering of Shadows with me. And then we will kick off A Conjuring of Light. Every week brings us a little bit closer to Threads of Power.